This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets now and in the future. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we're going to review the election and ask, should pollsters be fired?
But they definitely need to do some more work on eliminating bias, which is beginning to look more systemic than at first glance or 4 years ago. And so we'll put them on performance review and we'll check in another 4 years.
Why stocks rose even when the election outcome was so uncertain?
We're unlikely to get hikes in corporate taxes, which would have, of course, been bad for equity markets, negative for equity markets.
And what's more important to markets, the US presidential election or COVID-19?
The election is really important in setting the policy agenda for the next 4 and even up to 8 years. But I have to agree that particularly in the short term, the election is a bit of a sideshow compared to the pandemic.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well.
After 4 long, tense days, we've reached a historic moment in this election.
Okay. We have an announcement to make.
We can now project the winner of the presidential race.
Joe Biden is president-elect.
CNN projects Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th president of the United States, winning the White House and denying President Trump a second term.
It's been a stressful few days, hasn't it? Last Tuesday's US election dragged on for a bit longer than anticipated, and parts of Europe have gone into lockdown again in attempt to control the spread of coronavirus. Throw into the mix the news that there is hope of an effective vaccine for COVID-19, and it's been quite the rollercoaster ride. More on the vaccine later in the show, but I want to wind back just a few days earlier and start with the US election. A presidential race won by a cat's whisker by Vice President and Democrat Joe Biden, or certainly as the TV stations have called it. But it shouldn't have been that way. Polls before the election suggested an easy Biden victory over the incumbent Donald Trump. The outcome could not have been more different. Biden's victory eventually came on Saturday, but his slim margin of victory is still being disputed by the Trump campaign. But in this episode, I'm going to sit down with economist Pierre Sachdeva. We're going to discuss Bidenomics, the market's reaction to his win, and what effect a vaccine will have on both. But first, we're going to discuss the polls, how they got it so wrong again, and should the pollsters be fired?
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Consider the following. There is a mountain of polling data that suggests that if the election were held today, Joe Biden would be elected the nation's 46th president, and probably by a landslide. Take your pick.
That was CNN shortly before the election. Poll suggested Biden held a consistent 8-to-10-point lead. If it didn't point to a landslide victory, it should have at least been a comfortable win. That didn't happen. We didn't even get a so-called blue wave either, where the Democrats made a clean sweep to control the Senate and the House of Representatives. So what went wrong?
Yes, we did do quite a lot of work on tracking the polls through the election period. And yeah, it's great to see that the polls did get the outcome correct this year. The polls got the outcome correct in actually 11 out of the 12 swing states that we were tracking. But what the polls really tripped up on was how narrow the race was. And so the polls got, I think this the margin of error was more than 3%, which is meant to be the conventional margin of error. It was more than 3% in quite a few of the swing states, including Florida, which was seen as to investors as Biden's quick ticket to winning, and it would have eliminated a lot of uncertainty when really we had Trump win by more than expected. And I think the short-term implications of that were that investors had almost extrapolated a Democratic sweep from Biden's significant lead in the national polls. So we had some of that being priced out. And also longer-term investors will be more cautious because there does seem to be an anti-conservative bias here. And I think a big question now to answer, which I'm sure will a lot of work will be done in the next 4 years, is whether this is a Trump problem and whether this is a bias just associated with Trump, or more of a Republican issue and an anti-conservative, a wider anti-conservative issue.
Which is something the pollsters said they adjusted for and tested successfully in the 2018 midterms, when the poll results were far more accurate relative to the actual results. But again, in the general election, they got it wrong, and in a fairly big way. Sachdeva says that one issue is the unique way in which the Electoral College works. In the college system, it doesn't matter if the candidate wins the state by just one vote or a million votes. They still secure all that state's Electoral College votes. That's why presidents such as Trump can lose the popular vote but win the election. In other words, it looks like pollsters are better at predicting the popular vote than they are the Electoral College vote. But if they can't account for a silent Trump vote or a conservative vote, or adjust their figures accordingly, should pollsters be fired?
I think with the correct outcome for the president and the 90% hit rate in the swing states, it'd be unfair dismissal to fire the pollsters. But they definitely need to do some more work on eliminating bias, which is beginning to look more systemic than at first glance or 4 years ago. And so we'll put them on performance review and we'll check in another 4 years.
So the pollsters survived by the skin of their teeth. In the next part of the show, we're going to concentrate on the market reaction to the result and what a Biden presidency might mean for the economy.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor download.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us. We think there's going to be a lot of litigation because we have so much evidence, so much proof, and it's going to end up perhaps at the highest court in the land.
That was President Trump shortly after Election Day making yet-to-be-substantiated claims over voter fraud, claiming victory and creating more uncertainty. Markets, we are told, hate uncertainty. Yet despite all the ambiguity, the S&P 500 actually rose from just below 3,300 before the election to above 3,500 at the close on Friday the 6th of November, before Biden's win was actually announced. So what's been going on?
I think what the market was processing was that a split Congress means that we're unlikely to get hikes in corporate taxes, which would have, of course, been bad for equity markets, negative for equity markets. And I think part of the positive reaction from investors was also pricing out the element of uncertainty and potentially a contested election. So there was sort of a sigh of relief from investors that we at least had the result. And of course, tech stocks rallied. And I think that possibly reflects that Biden's unlikely to be able to put forward regulation that would affect these tech companies.
If Biden does become president, he's likely to do so without control of Congress. While the Democrats control the House of Representatives, it looks unlikely that they will control the Senate. Confirmation will come in the new year. That poses a problem for the president-elect and the US economy.
Yeah, so in the case of a Biden presidency and a split Congress, we think the main implications of that is that there's more limited scope for fiscal policy. So Biden's ability to significantly change the direction of policy would be limited because he'd need congressional approval for many of his policies. He'd have more power to do executive orders in areas like foreign policy and regulation. But I think the main thing that we're thinking about in terms of the outlook is really the scope for fiscal policy. And I think many investors were almost hoping for a Democratic sweep, which would have brought a larger fiscal package. And so I think now we're expecting something more along the lines of a $1 trillion package rather than a $3 trillion package. And in the shorter term, I think we'll have to be revising down our expectation for US growth in the fourth quarter. And that's not necessarily a reflection of the outcome of the election, but it's that we had previously anticipated that we would have had a fiscal package agreed by now in the US. And obviously, we've had that gridlock in Congress. And if it doesn't come through, I think the Fed would most likely increase their asset purchase program. So they'd look to ease further. And monetary policy is reaching the limits of what it can do. And so in terms of lifting the growth outlook, I think fiscal policy would be better. And so I think that's a big factor to look out for, not only for the economic outlook, but also for markets.
It looks like Biden will need to convince his allies on both sides of Congress if he is to wave his magic wand and bolster a flagging and coronavirus-ridden US economy. There's also the not-so-small matter of China. Trump has waged a trade war on China as part of a protectionist policy, which economists say has damaged the global economy. But will Biden take a different approach?
Yes, I think it is a more it's a more conventional view in Washington now that China needs to be held accountable for its unfair trade practices. And I think in that respect, Biden will have quite a hard line on China, but as you say, potentially more predictable. I think we're less likely to see trade wars reignite, but Biden take a more hardline approach to things like human rights. Biden is more likely to embrace the international rules-based order and take a more multilateral approach to his trade relations. And so overall, I think it is a positive for global trade. And I think the more predictable nature of Biden is, I think, helpful for those assets that had been hurt from the US-China trade wars in previous years.
A more nuanced take on China then might help some global trade recover and those firms hit by the trade war prosper. But as Johanna Kirkland, Schroders Chief Investment Officer, has already said, the US election was big news for the world, for the economy and markets. But as an investor, the pandemic is of far greater consequence. So in the final part of the show, we'll discuss what the news of a vaccine might mean for markets and the economy.
This is the news that we've been waiting to hear. Pfizer and BioNTech reporting the first results from their phase 3 vaccine trial, saying that in this interim look, the vaccine showed to be more than 90% effective in preventing COVID-19.
So it's early stages, but it does look like we have a vaccine. The new two-dose vaccine is said to be more than 90% effective in preventing COVID-19. To put that into context, the widely used measles vaccine is 97% effective, and the seasonal flu vaccine is between 40 and 60% effective. The news immediately engulfed that of the US election, which Sachdeva says is a bit of a sideshow for markets in the current climate.
The election is really important in setting the policy agenda for the next 4 and even up to 8 years. But I'd have to agree that, particularly in the short term, the election is a bit of a sideshow compared to the pandemic. So for example, for us, the risk of a democratic sweep in previous quarters was reflationary for the global economy, but not nearly of the same magnitude as the upside or downside risk from our pandemic-related scenarios like a V-shaped recovery or W-shaped recovery. And I think part of fiscal policy can only do so much to lift growth, whereas the downside from additional restrictions, particularly in the US, is very large. And it's worth saying that I'd say the same for Brexit as well, that COVID has made Brexit a sideshow. Forecasts from a hard Brexit are now were a rounding error in the lockdowns that we saw earlier on this year and the impact that it had on Q2 GDP.
So for the economy and markets, whatever is happening in politics looks to be a mere blip on the radar compared to the impact of COVID-19. But Sachdeva urges caution on the immediate effect of the vaccine.
So our central view is that we will get a vaccine in the second quarter of next year, but we could well get one earlier. The market is processing that good news that we've seen this week. And it would definitely take some time for a vaccine to be rolled out and people to get back to normal behaviour. And so we know that the vaccine won't be available for the less vulnerable parts of the population. And so we think there'll still be an element of caution. We've assumed that the economy starts to normalise in the second half of next year, but it might be till 2022 before people socialise normally in certain areas of the hospitality industry and parts of the economy are back to normal. So airlines, for example, have said that it may take 3 or up to 5 years for them to get back to normal. So there are parts of the economy that could even take longer to normalise.
And we're seeing that in Europe. A year into the pandemic and countries are still being forced to go into lockdown, damaging economies further. But will Europe likely suffer worse than the US as a result?
Yes, I think that's a reasonable assessment, particularly in the short term because of these restrictions being put on European activity. And there are risks to the downside in European activity, in that there are risks that these lockdowns can be extended into the first quarter of next year and continue to impact growth. A lot depends on our assumption for whether restrictions will be put on place in the US. And at this point, we don't see that happening. And of course, the US doesn't necessarily have a national lockdown per se, because it's done very differently in various states. Having said that, growth in the fourth quarter should be slightly softer in the US than we had expected, because we did think there'd be some fiscal stimulus by now. But we do expect this divergence to persist into the fourth quarter and maybe even into the first quarter of next year.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, you can go to schroders.com/insights. You can read more from Pia there. If you want to listen to more, it's schroders.com/the investor download. And if you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to provide any questions or ideas for future shows. And if you want to rate, review and subscribe to us, you can do that at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every other Monday and every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.